Joining us now, very pleased to welcome my next guest. Always makes time for us when asked, and we're very appreciative of that. State Representative Shane Stringer on the line. Representative, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making time. We do appreciate it. I guess first off, we're a month and some change into this year's legislative session after kind of a long, seemingly long hiatus. How has it been going?
It's getting a lot smoother. You know, it's a little transition there from way we normally do things to now. And, you know, some of it has its, you know, positives and some negatives, you know, but we're adjusting and getting used to it.
Well, it sounds like ultimately we're trending in the direction that the state house will get back open and things will get somewhat back to normal. I don't think it'll be fully back to normal, but it sounds, or at least it seems like it's headed that way.
Yeah, it sounds like with the latest order and the press release that the governor did that we're headed in that direction. And, you know, hopefully the vaccine shots is going to help, you know, get things back. And like you said, I don't think it'll be back to our normal, but maybe the new normal and something a little bit easier to deal with than what we're doing now.
I wanted to get you on to talk about HB 403. Congratulations. Getting this bill through, and, it creates criminal penalties for doxing. First of all, I'll try to walk us through, a technical or legal definition of doxing and tell us kind of where this applies.
Doxing is basically where you take a person's personal, what would be normally their personal information, their home address, their banking accounts, their children's names, where they go to school, their vehicle information, a lot of stuff that's not just all out there, and then using that on the internet, on social media, as a tool to cause harm or damage to your enemies, in a sense, or people that oppose you or have opposing views.
Yeah, and I know this happens around the country, and I've seen it happen, and I don't know. It typically happens to a lot of high-profile people, but that's not to say that it can't happen here in Alabama.
Yeah, it's actually kind of became the new weapon, the weapon of the future, I guess you could say. It's starting to be used more and more now that social media is so active and busy. And how I came across this as a Baldwin County deputy, was working a midnight shift, sitting at a closed convenience store doing a report on his computer whenever his dispatcher called and told him he needed to move. And turns out that a guy that's anti-law enforcement had put on his social media page where the deputy was at, basically encouraging someone to try to do him harm. And as we got to looking into this, there wasn't no crime because of his wording. And that's when I discovered what doxing was. And the more I got to looking into it, the more I knew that or found out that it's going on a lot more than we realize. And, you know, and it's probably going to get worse. You know, we did it, where it covers police, fire, elected officials, and people in that ring, but it may be something we're going to have to change and just make the crime of doxing to anyone to address.
Well, I mean, you see it and you always wonder, well, I guess, you know, that could be me. And how do you really protect yourself if the right person has that information? And it's not just yourself, I suppose. I mean, it's like you said, your kids or your vehicle, it's not necessarily even just the damage to person or property, but it's just the threat of it, which can be unsettling for a lot of people.
That's right. You know, and in certain situations and extreme situations, this has been really bad. It's been deadly. You know, we've had a case in New Jersey where someone doxed a judge in their state, and a person went to her house, and when her son opened the door, shot and killed her son and shot her husband. You had a case in California where someone doxed a judge out there, and that judge was shot and killed. And, you know, and there's other cases across the country where that same situation has occurred. And, you know, just because we've been blessed it hadn't happened in our state don't mean we need to sit back and wait for that. You know, times are changing. We're having to adjust as things change, just like we have with the COVID, and we're going to have to adjust with some of our laws and a way we address some of these issues.
Now, how far does it go? You gave us a definition. Is it how many violations, or is it just a subjective? How do you enforce it?
Well, the first offense is a Class A misdemeanor, and, you know, of course, throughout the negotiations on this bill, you had some on one side that wanted it to be lower, and, of course, you had the ones on the other side that wanted it to be extremely, you know, tough. So, you know, we met in the middle. We did it a Class A misdemeanor, the first offense. The second offense is a Class D felony, which is not much different than a Class A misdemeanor as far as no jail time, but it you know, I guess it gives the judges something to start with.
Right. And it's something that I guess, you know, the way you're looking downfield and you're seeing the way politics has become and cancel culture and everything of that sort, that this, you know, we live in a society where the ends justify the means, and the means, you know, that they're in some people's minds, for whatever reason, they think this kind of behavior is acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty sad to see what we've seen over the last, I would even say 6 months, you know, and how a lot of the social media is censoring people, and, you know, and the false narrative that gets put out by, you know, different ones and different groups. And, you know, I suspect this is going to be used more and more to cause harm. You know, they're using it in these protests and riot situations up in the north, where they're gathering information on our law enforcement officers that are working these events, and they're getting on a bullhorn, and they're sitting there calling out, you know, the officer's name, his wife's name, his children's name, where they work, where they go to school, where they live. And these are a lot of hateful people that are in these crowds that are looking to do harm to somebody, and it just puts people at risk. And, you know, it's a sad world we're living in. I'm, you know, disappointed in how some of these people have let politics affect them.
Well, it's an intimidation tactic, like you said. And I, you know, even some of you guys up in the legislature during the abortion ban 2 years ago, when that bill passed, it became a national story. And, you know, we have our disagreements in Alabama, but when they get nationalized and suddenly you start seeing a lot of, you know, members of the state senate or whatever's information online, I mean, I guess you got to be, you know, and if you're in the public eye, you got to be cautious about a lot of this anyway.
You do, you know, and you've seen it in other states where, you know, some of the, during the presidential election, where you had federal congressmen and congresswomen at restaurants and stuff that were being attacked and being harassed. And, you know, it's a new technique to try to force people to not want to be in law enforcement, not want them to be involved in politics. And, you know, it's kind of a bully technique to get what they want.
Joined by State Representative Shane Stringer here on the program. What is the status on this? Where are we headed? I see it's out of the House. What are the next steps?
Next, it'll come up in the Senate in a committee, and hopefully we can get it in a committee this week, and then if we can get it out, then it'll be on to the floor in the Senate. You know, and I'll be working the members up there and trying to gain support for it, which, you know, it had 100% support in the House. So
right.
Hopefully we can get that in the Senate also.
Yeah, it, for those that aren't aware of that, you didn't have anybody come out against it, so it was unanimously adopted.
Yeah, I was really shocked. I was expecting more opposition. But, you know, I think everybody on both sides of the aisle seen how important it is, and everybody is starting to see it go on, and everybody knows that it ain't, you know, it's not just one party that's being affected. It's not just one group of people. It can be used in a lot of different scenarios. So everybody, I think, realizes the importance of it and know that we need to address it.
Let's change gears here real quick. Oh, I got you. I saw that you had a Firearm Protection Act filed that would limit, I guess, law enforcement at certain levels from enforcing certain federal laws. I mean, that's always been kind of this constitutional question. We ran into it with immigration 10 years ago, where Alabama was trying to enforce immigration law, and the federal courts said, no, you can't do that. I don't think you ever run into that problem where the federal government frowns upon you enforcing federal quote-unquote laws or guidelines or whatever it might be when it comes to firearms. But you got something kind of that lays that out. Well, walk us through what you proposed.
Well, you know, basically with all the new restrictions we're seeing coming down and the, in my opinion, the overreach by our federal government involving our Second Amendment rights, I felt like something needed to be done. You know, so I did the bill, that the Alabama Firearm Protection Act. It's, you know, it's basically trying to uphold the Constitution. You know, in a nutshell, that's all I'm asking, is that we uphold the Constitution. But it just prohibits the state or any state agencies of law enforcement from prohibiting any new executive orders or laws that come out after January the 1st of 2021 relating to firearms. You know, there's enough regulations, probably too many regulations already in place as it is, and then you come back and start adding what they're doing, you know, and the bill as far as last Thursday they tried to, or they did get passed, I think, in the House, you know, adds a lot of new restrictions and a lot of unnecessary stuff in it that I believe. And I just think that we've got to do something to try to look out for our Constitution.
Well, and critics say you're trying to nullify federal law, but that's not the case. You're trying to, I guess, set some boundaries. You guys in the federal government, you guys do what you got to do, but you're enforcing it. We disagree, or we take issue with some of it here in Alabama, and we're not going to be responsible for enforcing your laws.
And that's exactly right, you know, and I've said this, you know, they're using, the federal government is using law enforcement to attack some of the gun rights. And, you know, there's been a lot of effort over the years to do away with certain guns, to do away with certain capacity magazines and a lot of stuff. And this bill addresses that. This bill prohibits any new or other laws or executive orders dealing with guns, magazines, accessories, and the stuff that comes with guns. And the Constitution covers it. I mean, plain and simple, it covers it. There's good balance in what we have now, and I don't think that there's any need for any continued to further overreach than what's going on.
What about, we always have this discussion, it's been kind of put on the back burner, but is there still movement on a, what they call it, the constitutional carry, where you permitless carry or anything like a lifetime permit, anything like that that is being discussed this year?
Yeah, there's a couple bills that are already dropped. I don't know what, you know, how they stand in the House or Senate. I do hear a lot of talk for them. You know, and I've done a little homework myself and reached out. You know, Mississippi has constitution carry now. I've spoken to four sheriffs over there, and all four of them said that crime did not go up, pistol permit sales didn't go down, and they really hadn't seen a big change. You know, they said the only thing they wish they could address is people wearing these loose holsters or not secure holsters. But it's a movement across the country, and it's coming sooner or later. You know, I've looked at, I've been working with Representative Proxy Roberts. He's got a great idea in creating a prohibited person database, which I think would add a extra layer of safety for the citizens. And it will not involve putting law-abiding citizens on another database or in another system. This would allow putting the people that are prohibited in a database that when a law enforcement officer pulls somebody over and he runs their tag or their license, it's going to let him know if they are prohibited. And that would allow him to kind of to get his, I guess, get his caution up as he's approaching these people. And that would, if the Constitution carries to pass, then that would give us an extra layer of security. Because right now, the pistol permits are more or less a second check. They're like a second safety check. But if we can get this prohibited person database up and running, I think between the federal list and then the prohibited person list, we would be in good shape. Now, the problem is going to be it's going to take a minute to get this implemented and getting in the probate courts, the municipal courts, the circuit courts, get all of the people that have to enter this information that would prohibit somebody to get them to enter that information and get it in there and get some kind of statewide database up and running. So, but once we get that up and running, I would feel confident. I'm law enforcement, my son's law enforcement, and I would feel confident with the safety of that.
Representative, we're out of time. We got to leave it there, but I appreciate you coming on this morning and Monday morning, and we'll do it again real soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Representative Shane Stringer, ladies and gentlemen of Citronelle.